we know that the North Koreans desperately try to get foreign currency and liquid funds that they can move back to Pyongyang.
Loose controls help fund North Korea. It's Tuesday, October 13th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, President Trump makes his final campaign push. U.S. vice presidential perspectives on China. Girls making a difference. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A new report points to allegations of violations of North Korean sanctions in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and observers say it is a sign of a systematic problem, and experts warn that unless the country improves its banking systems, it risks broader economic consequences. VOA's Salem Salomon has the story.
Business and banking dealings by North Koreans in the Democratic Republic of the Congo appear to violate numerous international sanctions, according to watchdog groups who say Pyongyang is taking advantage of the DRC's lax bank system. A report in August by Sentry, a Washington, D.C.-based organization that tracks money which finances conflict in Africa, found that in 2018, two North Korean businessmen traveled to the DRC on non-commercial visas, set up a construction firm, opened a bank account, and were awarded contracts for numerous projects, including building government-funded statues. Investigators say the report shows that North Korea is seeking out parts of the world where it can operate secretly and obtain foreign currency otherwise unavailable to the secretive and internationally isolated government.
All these different steps are important because that entire process is littered with a number of violations of UN, EU, and U.S. sanctions. And those sanctions specifically focus on preventing just the kind of activity we wrote about, which is North Koreans setting up businesses, which would give them an opportunity to generate revenue, and then allowing them to set up bank accounts that would enable them to transact in foreign currencies, which are critical to the government in Pyongyang.
That was John Deloso, senior investigator for Sentry. Jean-Louis Kayembe Wakayembe, who is the director general at the DRC Central Bank and head of the Monetary Policy Committee, declined to comment when contacted by VOA. North Korean officials have not commented on the Sentry allegations or business dealings in the DRC. The Sentry report says that upon arrival in the DRC, the North Korean men established relationships with elected officials from the People's Party for Reconstruction and Democracy, the former ruling party headed by ex-president Joseph Kabila. Among the projects undertaken by the North Koreans was building a statue of Kabila's father, ex-president Laurent Kabila, in the southern city of Kamina. Another statue they built in the city depicts a leader from the Luba ethnic group. Deloso said the opacity of the contracts makes it impossible to know exactly how much the men were paid, but he said similar statues can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. He also said it is unproven whether DRC officials knew they were breaking the law by doing business with North Koreans, but the general leniency in the country reveals major problems.
This wasn't just a single foul-up, if you want to call it that. There was a series of foul-ups that enabled this activity to take place. So even if the money had been small, we know that the North Koreans desperately try to get foreign currency and liquid funds that they can move back to Pyongyang. But the bigger question is, what else might be going on here in the country? And what is the level of enforcement of sanctions overall in the DRC?
In a recent event held by a Washington, D.C. think tank, the Atlantic Council, Congolese banking system expert Florbert Anzulini, the co-founder and coordinator of the Filimbi for Citizens movement, said the country is particularly vulnerable to this type of activity.
I'm clearly not surprised by the content of the report. It's clearly a systemic problem. It's not only this one. It's the consequence of a systemic problem, which includes bad governance and, of course, corruption.
He added that the DRC is one of the only countries in the world without a national identification system. Therefore, its banks are accustomed to taking alternative forms of ID, making it easy for foreigners to open accounts without scrutiny.
If you cannot identify persons, how could you be able to identify the business that are run by person? So the DRC is also one of the, let's say, the few countries where a non-resident can open and hold an account without a rigorous control. So the central bank is the one responsible.
Deloso says since a large percentage of business in the DRC is conducted in foreign currency, the country relies on relationships with international banks to keep its economy moving.
If the DRC were deprived of U.S. dollars, we're not just talking about large mining companies that all of a sudden are facing a crisis. We're talking about, you know, everyday people who are directly affected or indirectly affected. And that would be catastrophic, particularly in a country that's facing a lot of economic hardship right now connected to the COVID-19 pandemic and just general economic mismanagement.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China holds military invasion drill amid tensions with Taiwan. Deadly fighting rages for control of Afghan city. At least 18 killed in bus and train collision in Thailand. New Japanese Prime Minister plans Asia trip to prove solidarity with the United States. Aboriginal groups address inquiry into destruction of sacred rock shelters. We invite you to visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website for expanded coverage on all these stories and much more. Glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says he's ready to return to the campaign trail after his recent COVID-19 diagnosis. Former Vice President Joe Biden is heading to Ohio this week to press his case for a White House win come November 3rd. Meanwhile, the U.S. Senate begins confirmation hearings on Amy Coney Barrett, Trump's nominee for the vacancy on the Supreme Court. Michelle Quinn fills us in.
First of all, I'm feeling great. I don't know about you. How's everyone feeling?
With just 3 weeks left before Election Day, President Donald Trump said he's ready to get back on the campaign trail after recovering from COVID-19. His doctor released a statement Sunday saying the Republican president is no longer considered a transmission risk. But a presidential candidate debate scheduled for this week isn't happening. Trump pulled out of a planned virtual debate with former Vice President Joe Biden, a Democrat.
That's how debates have been handled in America for the last 200 years. You've stood there and you've debated somebody. And my father doesn't want to do it over a glorified conference call. He wants to stand on the stage, look somebody in the eyes, and Biden's not willing to do that.
The Biden campaign says its candidate looks forward to debating Trump in person on October 22nd. As long as the president is free of the infection and follows health protocols. Although Biden leads Trump by as many as 12 percentage points in a recent national poll of likely voters, both candidates are heading to so-called battleground states, key states that could decide the election. This week, Trump is scheduled to go to Florida for a rally and then Pennsylvania. Biden will be in Ohio. People have started voting in many states. Turnout appears high in Wisconsin, a battleground state, where in Dane County, a Democratic stronghold, the number of submitted ballots is already more than 36% of the county's total 2016 election vote, the New York Times reported. The Biden campaign is telling people to vote early and in person in states that allow them to do so.
We're telling people to take advantage of early vote in person. And remember, look, I'm on the ballot. New Orleans and Louisiana started early voting yesterday, and I'm encouraging people to take advantage of the voting process. Early vote in person is a great way to do it. It reduces lines on Election Day.
While the campaigns drive home their messages, the Senate begins confirmation hearings this week on Amy Coney Barrett to become the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. The hearing will provide another stage for discussions of the country's future. If confirmed, Barrett will replace Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died in September. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, nearly 20 people are dead, more than a dozen reported missing in central Vietnam after storms caused heavy flooding that left homes submerged. The severe weather also caused fishing boats to capsize in rough seas. Stay up to date with VOA. You're You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The vice presidential debate between Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris highlighted differences between their approaches on foreign policy and America's role in the world. The two candidates debated whether President Donald Trump or Democratic nominee Joe Biden would do a better job addressing challenges by U.S. rival China and its longtime adversary Iran. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara reports.
The coronavirus has dominated American politics in recent months, but in this week's vice presidential debate, Vice President Mike Pence and his Democratic opponent Senator Kamala Harris argued their view of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East and China, issues that have had less focus in the campaign so far. Pence slammed Biden for being a cheerleader for communist China. He said the administration wants to improve relations with Beijing, but that Trump will also hold China accountable for the pandemic.
China and the World Health Organization do not play straight with the American people.
Harris accused Trump of hurting American jobs and economy because of his trade war with China. She cited recent global opinion polls by Pew Research that indicated U.S. allies now respect China's Xi Jinping more than they do Donald Trump.
This is where we are today because of a failure of leadership by this administration.
The Pence-Harris debate outlined a difference in foreign policy between Trump's America First doctrine and Biden's multilateral approach. If elected, Biden has promised he would return the U.S. to leadership roles in international organizations like the World Trade Organization and Trans-Pacific Partnership to contain adversaries, including China. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News at the White House.
A new exhibit at the recently reopened National Museum of American History shows the challenges young women face growing up in the United States. Girlhood, It's Complicated, showcases the lives of American girls who advocated for social change and shaped the country's history. Karina Bafrijan has the story.
The new exhibit opening at the National Museum of American History, called Girlhood, It's Complicated, highlights the sometimes difficult journey of women growing up in the United States.
We also want people to understand that girlhood's complicated, right? That girls take big risks to use their voices, to walk on the front lines of change, and to be political advocates.
The exhibition is divided into five sections: health, education, work, politics, and fashion. Each of them walks the visitors through the history of girls growing up and maturing during different times in American history, from the American Revolution to our days.
Girls are taught so much about where they fit in, what they should wear, how they should look, who is a girl, who is not, who is our ideal girl. And girls automatically become more conscious of themselves, and they try to express themselves through this barrage and tornado of advice coming at them, and that makes you political.
Girls with very different lives have become the center and focus of the exhibit, including Helen Keller, a well-known political activist and author who lived in the first half of the 20th century. She was rendered deaf and blind by a childhood illness, but still pursued a higher education and spent her life fighting racism and gender discrimination. 13-year-old Naomi Wadler has a different story. The American student and activist gained the public's attention in 2018 when she made a passionate speech in Washington, D.C. against gun violence in America. The curators also spoke with many young girls across the nation to create the exhibit. The October 11 opening coincides with the United Nations International Day of the Girl Child, which aims to highlight the many challenges girls around the world face every day. The exhibit will stay open until 2022, giving girls and women more time to experience the exhibit firsthand. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Washington.
We're glad you've been able to spend some time with us today on VOA Asia. You can continue by following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd also like to thank those who helped bring the program to you, our managing editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.